Shoot the Defence, the best podcast in the world. We're out here.
I keep saying Henry's a forward.
Richie, who's the best striker you played against?
Henry.
And the fact that we are now taking our country and put our country on the map of world soccer, being the first African nation, the third world nation in the whole world to win an Olympic gold medal in soccer, you know, it was unbelievable.
If you're going to take the time to go and get a pig head and break my locker open and wrap my clothes in it, and send in a different message to me.
I've had to protect my family from going out into the street because you'll have random people that just coming up and abusing them racially. Even some old school managers who are British, they still have the same racial undertones like the man in the street who they're trying to condemn.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Shoot the Defence. Special one today because 16 years ago today at the Estádio da Luz in Lisbon, Portugal, the football world bore witness to what is probably the greatest upset in international football history. Greece, led by its German manager Otto Rehhagel, upset all the odds as they were crowned 2004 European champions. That match, that summer, is indelibly etched into the memory of all Greek football fans. And for a country with such a rich history, the birthplace of the Olympic Games, the Ethniki's exploits and successes at Euro 2004 was a benchmark for surprise and ecstasy. Much has been written and debated about that tournament, but anyone wanting to read anything about it in English would have to trawl through online articles, old magazines, newspapers. The lack of an English language coverage of Greece's incredible Euro 2004 success prompted my guest to write his book, which we will be discussing today, titled Achieving the Impossible, the Remarkable Story of How Greece Won the Euro 2004. The book chronicles not only the tournament itself, but also how Greece qualified for the tournament, and with lots of interviews from many of that now fabled squad. My guest has covered stories around the football world, specifically places and teams far away from the usual media limelight. He has always specialised in covering Greek football and has written extensively on the Greek game. Ladies and gentlemen, all the way from New Hampshire in the United States, I welcome George Tsitsonis to the show. George, hello and welcome to the show. How are you?
Doing well, Mike. Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Excellent. Now, before we dive into the book properly and the 2004 team, I have to ask you about the story you tell in your prologue. Your dad took you to watch Greece against Argentina in 1994 World Cup, and you actually got to see Maradona live. How was that?
For me, I guess it was not the greatest experience because I was, there as a Greek supporter. But yeah, it was amazing to see Maradona, and he scored a cracker of a goal in that match, unfortunately for us, but obviously one that will kind of go down as one, probably one of his best that, not the best, of course. We know some of the ones that have gone down in history as his greatest, but it was a very nice goal. It was interesting to see. You know, obviously not the best experience as a Greek supporter there, but yeah, we talk about a little bit about that in the prologue and kind of the journey that I went through as a fan in that 10-year period from 1994 to 2004.
Excellent. I mean, at the beginning of the book, you actually wrote about, quote, the importance of hope, and how the book is, again, another quote, the story of a team that defied logic, and that impossible is nothing. For me, it's a great scene setter. It's a great start to the book. And I guess with ideals and words, we would do well to live by. Was this a deliberate beginning for the book?
It was. I think, if I take a step away from just being a Greek supporter and just being a football fan, we were always supporting teams sometimes that aren't really winning titles on a regular basis, you know, and when we are able to experience something like that or see a team go through that journey, it gives everybody a little bit of hope, whether it's football or not, that you can do great things. The teams that you support might be able to do amazing things. I've always kind of used that experience watching those matches, taking the journey with that team. And always, fills me up with maybe a little bit more optimism than I should have when watching football. You know, even if we're down 2 or 3-0, we can come back. But yeah, this team definitely gave all of us reason to hope when we're watching matches, watching competitions with our clubs or national teams participating in.
Excellent, excellent. When I look at the context and the contents of the book, and I saw chapter one and I started reading it, it was longer than I thought it would be, given that it's about the history of the Greece national team.
Yeah.
But however, the 1970 World Cup qualification campaign was quite noteworthy, wasn't it? Do you want to just take our readers through some of that?
Sure. This is kind of symbolic of Greek football over the ages. Lots of talent, lots of potential, and that never really was able to come to fruition. So the 1970 side was a fantastic side who was able to defeat teams like Portugal with the great Eusebio back then. And they had a magnificent qualifying campaign and at the end came up just short to qualify for what would have been their first World Cup. And going through the history of Greek football, I thought was just a good way to introduce readers to, you know, this country that is small, but has always been able to consistently produce really good talent. But then there was always a little bit of a gap between being able to put it all together at the national team level and taking a long time for some of those players to be able to go to Europe and play abroad.
Excellent. And, of course, anyone who knows anything about Greek society knows that politics envelopes everything. And that was certainly the case during the 1994 World Cup campaign, the first World Cup that Greece had ever qualified for. Now, that experience couldn't be any further from what 2004 team experienced during Euro 2004. Now, given the two tournaments were only a decade apart, is there an argument to suggest that Greek football learned from the, I guess, debacle on and off the pitch of 1994?
The quick answer is no, because from 1994 until 2001, we saw similar themes emerge within the national team. We saw a lot of an inability for the federation, the coaching staff and the players to work together on a consistent basis, kind of pulling forth in the same direction. There was a lot of cliques that remained between the players where club loyalties usually just trumped anything to do with a national team. So unfortunately, I can't say that many lessons were learned until Otto Rahagil takes over in 2001. And I think that is when we start to see his strength of character being able to now to pull all of these different parts together to achieve something special. And only then, I think, were we really able to see what the potential of Greek football could really be when all sides were working together.
Excellent. Thank you. There's a great part early in the book when I think it might be Karagounis who states that many of the players from the 2004 squad, they knew that they were among a special group of talent. And I guess the seeds were sown in youth football, both at the 95 under-18 Euros, the 98 under-21 Euros. How important were those tournaments for some of those players and the team?
So every player that I spoke to seemed to bring up those tournaments. Okay. And how important it was for them to see that they could compete with elite sides from the continent. And they did very well in those tournaments and came up just short. In the 1998 tournament, they lost to Spain in the final. And Karagounis, in fact, still talks about how upsetting that was because they really thought they should have won that competition. But I believe that though that group of players saw even at that early stage what their potential was, and it was just the right group at the right time coming together, and they really had high hopes of being able to kind of carry through to senior level to be able to do that. At the start, as they all kind of got to the senior national side, the pieces were not coming together. And again, I go back to the difficulties between the kind of the presence and the strength of club football in Greece and how it's always kind of been viewed at a higher level than a national team. And until Rahagil came in to kind of get the players, the federation, even fans to understand how important the national team was, only then did we see Greece begin to achieve success.
And I guess, you know, it's a nice introduction then to the next point, because chapter three gives a really detailed coverage of Otto Rehagel and his career. And obviously he is an important protagonist in this story, the Euro 2004 story and the journey. Why did you feel it was important to devote so much space and words and, you know, a whole chapter to him?
Well, there's a couple different reasons. One was that I just thought that he was the main character in this whole story that I was trying to tell. Obviously, the players are the ones that do it on the pitch, and they're hugely important. And without their talent and without their ability to kind of follow through with his directives, none of this would have happened. But Rahagil is the man that he organized this. He put the foundations in place to be able for this squad to come together and do what they did on the pitch. The second reason why I thought it was very important to relay some of his experiences to the reader who may not have known kind of his story was that his first qualifier with Greece, they lose 5-1 to Finland. And in Greece, this obviously sends, you know, huge alarm bells going through everybody, because Rahagil was not necessarily a very popular appointment at the start, even though he had done some tremendous work at club level in Germany. But for him, he was a very balanced character. He was very... he was not going to be at all, that was not going to rattle him too much. You know, he obviously did not want to lose that match by that scoreline, but he was able to kind of see what kind of squad he had at that point and what changes he needed to do to make in order for Greece to have a chance at success. Remember, this was a man now, when we talk about his career, he had run through the gamut of coaching. So initially he was known as a firefighter, somebody that came in to save teams that were trouble relegation-wise. As he found success doing that, he was able then to coach bigger sides. But at one point, when he got his dream job at the beginning of just before the halfway mark of his career in Germany, he got his dream job of coaching Borussia Dortmund, okay? And that stint ended with him losing 12-0 on the final day of the season to Borussia Mönchengladbach in what is just remains a, you know, one of the craziest scorelines we've seen at the Bundesliga level. So, you know, for him to have come through those types of experiences, nothing was going to faze him when he came into the Greek job. And I think it was important for readers to see why he was so unshakable, because in 30 years, he had literally done everything. He had been relegated. He had saved clubs from relegation. He had suffered crazy defeats. You'll find in the book that he came into trouble with the German Football Federation for some of the things he either said or did on the touchline. And, so I think, of course, he had great success with Werder Bremen during a 14-year period where he led them to league titles and European Cups. So, you know, to kind of get this story and see that this was a vastly experienced manager who, you know, was not going to be fazed by anything that happened in Greece, whereas many others probably would have been like, I've got to get out of here, or maybe would have been easy to kind of sweep away.
Excellent, excellent. And I guess to emphasize the point you just made, the way Rahagil handled fullback Yorgatos divided opinion at the time, certainly amongst fans, Greece, Greek pundits, the media, but also players as well. But looking back, and like most things, Rahagil was right, wasn't he?
Absolutely. You know, Yorgatos probably was the biggest name in the Greek squad at that point, playing for Inter Milan in a time period where some Greeks were beginning to play at European clubs, but not necessarily too many were playing abroad just yet. And for him to take such a decision to axe, you know, the biggest name from the squad, was, you know, for many people, they were like, what is this guy doing? He's just lost 5-1. He's getting rid of some of our best players. You know, there was a lot of questioning about these sort of tactics and these sort of decisions. But in the end, you know, he wanted to build a side. And again, I go back to maybe to the question you asked before. That's what he did in Germany. He was never a manager who wanted star names. You know, he always seemed to struggle when he had to work with some of those players. So he had a period of time at Bayern Munich, not quite a full season, where, you know, he had a very difficult time, you know, in that type of environment. He needed the control. He needed to be able to make the big decisions, but also to be able to mold the team into his style. And that style was an emphasis on hard work. And it was players that played in that style needed to be ones that worked for the team. And Yorgatos was somebody that he identified as early on as not being one of those.
Excellent. While reading the book, I love the way that your narrative is interspersed and broken up with biographies of individual players relevant to that part of the story that you're telling. And I think it's a nice touch, and it gives a very personal feel. and many of the players are quoted. So, question, did this require much research on your part, and how obliging were the players to talk to you for the book?
So I spoke to about six or seven players for the book, as well as assistant manager Yannis Topolidis, as well as a whole host of journalists, Greek journalists and foreign. So the players were very open, you know. The ones that were willing to speak with me and the ones I was able to get a hold of were just, you know, they just produced solid gold as far as the things that they were telling me and their experiences and relaying those. As far as the rest of the, I took a little bit of research, of course. You know, it took talking to some journalists. It took just my own research from where I was, but also, you know, other players speaking about those players. So there's also some quotes from certain players about their teammates, you know, and of course that kind of account always helps as well. So, I thought, you know, to break up a little bit of the story, it was nice to maybe delve into some of these names who aren't very familiar to many supporters.
No, I thought it was good, as I said. I thought it was great. And you mentioned him during your answer just there. How important was Topolidis for the team, for Ray Hargill, and for you, for the book?
Topolidis was vital, I think, on all accounts. He gave me such amazing firsthand accounts of his dealings with Erhagel, the whole story of how he came to become the assistant coach. You got to get a real glimpse into how Erhagel worked and the relationship between those two, which started as maybe perhaps a little awkward because they did not know each other, and then just grew into this great friendship and then coaching relationship that they were able to forge. Topolidis is a huge figure in with regard for this team, probably more so than most assistant coaches are. He was the main translator. So Erhagel, everything that Erhagel said, Topolidis, it went through Topolidis, and Topolidis was... went to great pains to explain to me that he did not always translate in exactly the manner that Erhagel would say things. So he would put his own little Greek spin on things, just knowing the way that the players needed it to be delivered. So their working relationship was massive as far as this team's success goes. And we have to remember too that Greece had no other coaches on board. It was Erhagel and Topolidis. There was no goalkeeping coach. There was no real conditioning coach or anything like that. Two guys led this group of 23 players to European championship.
Brilliant. I'm glad you mentioned the translation, because when Greece came to North London, to Craven Cottage to play South Korea, I sat next to Topolidis, and I was I was being given questions in English by the South Korean press. I translated them into Greek, and he translated them to German. Now, I don't know whether what was actually asked and what eventually got to Erhagel was the same, but it was quite an enjoyable evening.
Fantastic.
Okay, so Erhagel and Topolidis started to instill discipline and trust among the squad very, very early on. And there was a seriousness in the preparation during qualification. This was even to the extent that Erhagel asked the Greek FA for certain things, the Greek Federation. And this was pretty unheard of in Greece, wasn't it? Can you tell our listeners, you know, what he asked for and things that were quite unusual?
Sure, yeah. At the beginning, Erhagel needed a car and he needed a house to stay in when he was traveling to Greece. Besides that, he wanted a few different things. First, he wanted to be able to select his own assistant manager, which, you know, that's how Topolidis came to the fore. But he wanted the elimination of outsiders, officials, people that did not belong necessarily with the group of players on away trips. He felt that they were an unnecessary distraction. He saw early on how there seemed to be some political play, you know, in the mix, things that maybe he didn't quite understand, but things that were visible to him that, you know, we do not need this. We do not need these distractions and whatnot. So, this was basically unheard of as far as, you know, there was a lot of hangers on over the years for Greece, officials and others that, you know, sought to get free trips and to go to places all over Europe and whatnot for qualifiers. So Erhagel, you know, the discipline began with wanting this team to be solely focused on what they were going out to do. And if they were to travel somewhere for a crucial qualifier, the focus needed to be on that match and not on anything else. And there should be zero distractions from external sources.
So it's, I guess, bringing to the fore the professionalism that he thought that is required to take this team as far as it could go.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, that was, I think, for him to see kind of what was happening in the early days of his tenure, for him was kind of unheard of. So he saw things that he didn't like, and he made requests. He said, "This the only way I can really work is if some of these things are fixed." And he was there to do a job. And in the beginning, there was question marks about, okay, is he here just for kind of one final paycheck and to retire in the sun? But as the time passed, players and the federation saw that this was a very serious man who had real plans for this side. And as he got closer to the federation, his relationship with the president, Vasilis Gagatsis, was very important. They were willing to do whatever because they saw that he was starting to produce results on the pitch.
Excellent. So qualification campaign starts, and it didn't go too well the first two games. They lost to group rivals Spain and Ukraine. And as is normal in Greek football, Greek media, Rehagel got lots of criticism. Was he ever close to getting the sack? Because he was under severe pressure after those two games.
Very close. It was very close right after the Ukraine match. The thing that really saved him was his relationship with Gagatsis. So the president of the Greek Football Federation was a huge believer in this man. And really, that was the only thing that kept him on. But even Gagatsis, who I was able, fortunate enough to speak to, was able to explain that he was under serious pressure to get rid of Rehagel. There was a couple wins that followed after those first two defeats. Again, they were not against sides that you'd think that, would really change the tide. So we get to a qualifier against Spain in June of 2003. And really, Rehagel's whole tenure as Greek coach is riding on the result of that match.
Excellent. We talked earlier about the player biographies that you include. And one particular quote which struck me was for his importance was where Stelios Giannakopoulos talked about his move to Bolton. And he said, quote, "In England, I grew and became a complete footballer," end quote. Now, is this what set this Greece team apart from their predecessors, that many of them got to experience a professionalism in their club football because many did play abroad? And this was not something that was usual in the Greek league.
Absolutely. And Giannakopoulos, I think, says it best there. About half of this squad had experience playing abroad. And that was a really important factor in the growth of some of these players, but not only the individual players, it's what they brought back to the national team, this level of professionalism that they were not used to seeing in Greece. So you have players that have played in England and Spain and Germany, and they just saw a different way that things were done on the continent. And, as they went back to the national side and as Greece grew in stature as well, and some of these players were beginning to be looked at because, Giannakopoulos is starting to do well. The Bizas was in the Premier League as an established player at that point. Charisteas had moved to Germany. So all of a sudden, the level of interest in Greek players was rising. And yeah, of course, the quality that they encountered abroad as compared to the Greek league and the level of professionalism was a major factor in really boosting the level of the national team.
Okay. In the book, you don't shy away from giving the reader, Greekisms and using some Greek words and phrases with explanations, I might add. And probably my favourite is where you quote Demis Nikolaidis, where you quote him as saying that the team had an aim to make the shirt heavy. Can you explain this one in the context to our listeners?
Absolutely. So in Greece, there's a term that's it's varia fanella, which means translated directly means heavy shirt. And it's always used to describe sides in international football and as well as at the club level who have the weight of history, of accomplishment, of achievement on their side, even when they're not playing well. So, for instance, we'll use that term when describing Germany. say they're playing a second round matchup and they've not been playing well at the group stage, you know, somebody will say, yeah, but they have a varia fanella, you know, they have a heavy shirt, and that will get them through until they start to put it together. So for a long time, Greece could never say anything like that about its own national side. But then Rehagel comes and this era begins, and all of a sudden that all starts to change. And then it's a term that Greeks themselves then begin to use in the post Euro 2004 period. So, you know, from 2001 to 2014, Greece qualifies for every major tournament except for the 2006 World Cup. And then, you know, you start to hear Greek fans, Greek journalists, even the players themselves start to refer to terms like that about how, well, you know, maybe we haven't been playing well, but we, you know, we have this experience and we have this way that we'll get through it. And, you know, so I always thought that was interesting to kind of see the transformation of a side that they only saw that abroad from other teams. And then all of a sudden we could say that about ourselves.
So a legacy of success, I guess.
Absolutely. Yes. Yes, exactly.
And onto the tournament. So Greece qualify. They qualified on top of their group, onto the tournament, and where you take the reader in detail through the group stage, quarterfinal versus France, semi-final versus Czech Republic, and of course the final v Portugal. Did you at any point consider including maybe a deeper tactical analysis of those games for the reader, maybe using diagrams, anything like that? Or did you think that was too niche?
Yeah, you know, I thought that the story was the more important part. And obviously, you know, you could, and there was probably a lot better tactical analysts out there better than me who have done a great job of explaining it. You know, we delve a little bit of the tactics and some of the different techniques that were used in those matches. But for me, you know, it was about the story and about how this side was looking at all of these huge rivals, these big names in European football. And, you know, and tactics are important. But I thought maybe even more important was how some of these matches went and the little details of you know, these plays that maybe you don't necessarily remember, you know, even Greeks who have watched the matches sometimes have said to me over the last few weeks, like, I did not even remember that play, you know. So there's a play in the third match, for instance, against Russia, where Dmitry Kirichenko, the Russian attacker, there's a ball played across the face of goal. If he puts that in, he comes just inches away, he misses, then Greece are out, you know. So I was trying to find those moments, those little stories maybe within the story that the reader could see and just kind of bring them along on the journey of the tournament. You know, certainly the tactical aspect is important, but my focus was more on, you know, more on the story.
Is there any game that you rate higher than the others, and for any reason? I mean, of course, the final and the final whistle itself was incredible, but in terms of what it meant, maybe this, an emotion or a sense of belief, is there any game that you would say, that's the one I like, that's the one, that's my number one?
Yeah, for me, it's got to be the opener against Portugal, because obviously we had built a side that looked pretty strong, but nobody really expected much from this team. And then when we look back 10 years before and kind of the excitement of Greece going to the World Cup and then the debacle that followed, there was a lot of apprehension in Greece about how this tournament was going to go. And one of Greece's final tune-up matches for Euro 2004 was against Holland, which they promptly lost 4-0. There was a kind of brief 12-minute period where they shipped three goals, and, you know, maybe that was, it was a kind of a freak accident as far as the Greeks went, but that was a result that really started to send alarm bells going across Greece, because they're like, okay, we do not want to be embarrassed again when we go to this tournament. So the way Greece came out in that opener against Portugal, setting the tone early with their pressing, Karagounis' early goal, and the way they just really, the energy and the spirit of that side, I think was that result. I just seemed to start that momentum that Greece carried through the entire tournament. And it really made the players believe, you know, and I think belief was a huge part of the story. And, you know, they had some shaky moments here and there in certain matches, but this is a team that was united and a team that believed that they could go on to do something special.
Excellent. I mean, I'll always remember that game as well for two reasons. One, because I backed Karagounis for the first goal. And secondly, we're at a friend's house, we're having a barbecue and so on, and one of the British radio stations called me up and said, do you want to give us a you know, just a preview of the match and so on, and any players to watch out for. And that started my association with the radio station Talk Sport all those years ago. So I'm forever grateful to Yorgo and the rest of them.
Brilliant.
So when you talked to the players for the book and you discussed these games, how did they react? Is there, I'm assuming there's still an emotion and an excitement attached to those games. What were the different feelings that you got from the players?
Yeah, there's a real deep emotion when the players reflect on these matches. And, you know, I was getting goosebumps, but the players speaking to me were telling me that they were getting goosebumps when they were telling the story.
Wow.
So it was to hear these firsthand accounts of, you know, match by match and the experiences that the players were able to go through. Oh, it was just, it was so special. And, you know, it greatly enhanced the book because, you know, you cannot beat hearing from somebody that experienced this, you know, what it felt like, you know, in these moments where Greece were doing things on a football level that their country had never done before, you know. So these players were making history match after match, you know, and to hear them, you know, recount this was just absolutely amazing. It was, you know, I was honored to be able to hear it from them.
In your conversation with the players and anyone else beyond the squad, the playing squad, were there any things that you didn't include or couldn't include? Is any insight into that? Or
yeah, I mean, there was a couple of things that you know, there was a couple of players who one, for instance, who I'll say that, you know, there was a certain period of time they were not able to play for the national side for a particular reason, and they did not want that story told. So, you know, I was unable to tell that. I respected that, of course. Mm-hmm. You know, but for the most part, you know, most things were not off limits. You know, these are players that are very proud, you know, and wanted to tell their story. And it hasn't been told many times, you know, especially in the English language. Certainly not, I don't think, to the comprehensive fashion that we've been able to. So, you know, they were very willing to talk about pretty much anything. So most things were not off limits. The guys were fantastic as far as, you know, answering any questions that I had.
No, that's good to hear. And when Greece won, you know, when the final whistle was blown, do you remember where you were yourself and what you did? I was in South London watching the game at my parents' house. And at the final whistle, we joined thousands of Greeks and Greek Cypriots in North London to celebrate in the streets near Southgate Tube Station. An incredible occasion. What were your memories of that day?
Yeah, so it was July 4th here in the States, so it's our Independence Day, of course. And so we were all gathered at my parents' house, big crowd, everybody's there, friends, family, cousins, whoever, siblings and whatnot, my girlfriend, who later became my wife, and my grandparents, and just the living each minute like that with that group of people that was so special to me. Was amazing. You know, I think it's the only thing that would have beaten me being in Portugal at that period of time. So, you know, I'll never forget when Charisteas scores and literally seeing my grandparents both jump up in the air, you know, like, you know, 75 years old.
Wow.
And just, you know, they had never watched a football match in their life. You know, they were not interested in the game at all, but this wave of emotion that swept through all Greeks, both in Greece and abroad, was unbelievable. And, you know, I'll never forget Charisteas scoring. And I repeated what I did during the semifinal, where, like, I literally ran out of the house with just arms outstretched, running down this huge hill at my parents' house into the street, you know. I mean, just the emotion that involved, memories, and driving around later on with my wife at night with Greek flags hanging out of our car, you know, through kind of a rural area and then into a little bit bigger city where people are just looking at us like, who are these? You know, it's not a huge Greek area. So, you know, just the memories that for me on a personal level, I'll never, ever forget. Just absolutely amazing.
So from America to England, to Greece, to Australia, all corners of the world.
All corners. Absolutely.
In a recent interview I gave to UK Talksport Radio, it's about Euro 2004. I said that Greece's ultimate triumph can be traced back to the Old Trafford game for England in the World Cup qualifier, affectionately known in here in England as the Beckham free kick game. Now, it was only Ray Hargreaves, I think, his second match in charge, but I believe even at that early stage in his reign that the belief started. Now, Beckham's free kick is often replayed in England and the you know, England getting to the World Cup is lauded and it symbolises something important. And that's fair, that's fine. But Greece played very well in that match. Am I right in my assessment that this is when players believe they were part of something special and that they then bought into exactly what Ray Hargill was trying to do?
On that day, October 2001, a new team was born. Mm. I mean, talking to Nikos Dabizos in particular, who was playing in England at the time, and to hear some of the smack that he was getting from teammates and whatnot about how Greece was going to lose this quite handily, and to talk about the performance and then the belief that emerged because of that performance, it is a massive moment. When we're talking about the history of this team, you know, that Greece performed extremely well in that match. I think caught England by surprise because through most of the first half and even part of the second, England really had no answer as how to break this team down. Lots of half chances, lots of Beckham free kicks, which, you know, if you talk to Greek fans, they'll say probably too many during that match were whistled. But you know, and yeah, that's what so many football fans will remember was Beckham's, you know, amazing free kick at the end. But for Greece, you know, that was the moment that the team under Rahagil was really born. Going into that match, again, lots of questions about Rahagil. He was not spending much time in Greece up to that point. He had not taken any Greek league matches in person. He had only held a handful of training sessions with the side. So a lot of it really came down to just a few tactical tweaks that he wanted to do, and he showed early on in his reign, especially in that match, you know, how he was able to read opposing sides and then implement tactics that, you know, could nullify, you know, their strengths. And, you know, that match in particular was when the players got on board, because if you look at some of the quotes, which I do have in the book, of players talking about Rahagil, you can even see from those that, you know, they were very uneasy so far about this relationship that had emerged. And, you know, after that, you know, they bought in. So it was a real, real key moment in the building of this side.
Interesting you should mention about the tactical facet of Ray Hargill's preparation. Because I would ask you this. How many times during the Euro 2004 tournament did Greece's opponents concentrate on how themselves were going to play and didn't really factor in who they were going to play? Whereas it's obviously abundantly clear that Ray Hargill analysed opponents and set his team up for every match with a plan specifically for every team Greece were playing. So was it the perfect storm where, being such underdogs, but with a group of players who had this belief in their manager now and who was meticulous in his preparation, saw the unthinkable become reality?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think, yeah, as Greece continued to win in the tournament, they did gain a respect from other sides. However, if you were playing a team in the quarterfinals or the semifinals or the final, you wanted to play Greece. You know, you wanted to play a team that hadn't really done much in international football up to that point. So I believe teams really thought that, hey, if we play our game, we can break them down eventually. We will score the goal we need and they will not be able to. So teams really focused on their own playing style. And as you said, perfect storm. So Rahagil then, on the flip side, is looking at how each opponent is playing. And his team selection was geared towards that. So you saw certain players who may have played very well in the match before were left out of the starting lineup, you know. And he had a way of kind of reading how these sides were playing and then, you know, putting into place you know, what he thought was needed in order to defeat them. And, you know, there was a lot of man marking employed by Rahagil. So he loved to look at those individual matchups and to be like, okay, we will put Saitaridis here and we'll put Kapsis against him. And I know that he filled the players up with so much confidence, you know, so you're going to be marking Thierry Henry, you know, to the Saitaridis, or Kapsis had to go up against Jan Koller at one point, who was, you know, he was giving up at least 8 inches, you know, but he made these players believe that they had no problem in matching up against some of these really, really big names.
Excellent. George, how do you answer critics who claim that Greece's success at Euro 2004 was at the expense of good football, was in fact anti-football, and by winning the tournament sent football back years because of their, you know, perceived defensive tactics?
Well, you know, like one of the reasons why I wanted to write the book was maybe to to put maybe a different little spin on this whole story, and maybe giving some of the backstory and the journey of this side, maybe to have fans take a second look at this side. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say Greece played like Brazil or this, you know, amazing free-flowing style. That wasn't the case. However, I think if you watch the matches over, which I've watched them several times, and you kind of look at what Greece did, they obviously put an emphasis on defending. There's no, you know, that's for sure. But Greece is a side that when they did gain possession, they really tried to move the ball forward. So they did play a counterattacking style, but they were always looking to go forward. They were always looking to try to spring, you know, something on the break. But they did maintain the ball. They had players like Karagounis, players like Basinas and Zagorakis, Tsartas, who came in a lot of times, Vasilis Tsartas, who, you know, they were good technically with the ball at their feet. You know, they were able to hold on to the ball. Now, they were playing some really big sides who had more talent than them. There's no question about that. So they're playing Portugal, they're playing France, they're playing Spain, they're playing the Czech Republic. You know, these sides all possessed greater talent than Greece did. So in order to win these matches, as many of the coaches and the players that I talked to said, they had to be realistic. They had to be pragmatists. You know, they could not play the other team's style and win. So right before the France match, for instance, Rago's giving his team talk, and he says what he wants to say tactically, and then he says to the players, listen, this is how it's going to be. He starts the shadow box with his assistant coach, Topalidis, and he's like, if we go in full attack mode against France, we're going to get knocked out, okay? But if we jab and move, if we pick our moments where we can maybe break them down and find some opening, he's like, but also, you know, make sure we're playing good defense. Keep our guard up. We have a great chance of winning this match. So, you know, you can say what you want. And, of course, we've seen so many teams in international football over the years. And I guess it's sometimes just the spin that gets put on it. So if Italy win a title, it's because of the fantastic Italian defending. And you know, when Greece won it in this particular instance, it got kind of a negative rap. I think if you look back on the matches, you'll see a side that was not bunkered in for 90 minutes straight, hanging on for dear life. There were certainly moments in the last 20 minutes where they were trying to hold on to their lead, but I think that's natural. I think we see that in every tournament, you know, every season at club international level. So have they got a fair shake of how they've been kind of portrayed? I don't think so. I'm a little biased, but I hope if somebody reads the book, maybe they'll take a second look at it.
I guess my response is always, at the end of the day, at the highest level of sport, it's about winning, and they won. Yeah. And that's what that counts at the end of the day.
Yes, absolutely. I agree. You know, especially when you're talking about national teams that only have a certain amount of time to prepare. You know, we don't always get the most aesthetically pleasing football. Occasionally, you know, they're just battles, especially at latter stages of international tournaments. So for a team like Greece, who was never expected to win a title, for their supporters, you know, they're not going to make excuses for their side. They'll win like that all day long. So, and I think that holds true for fans of many countries. You know, they did not cheat, they did not lie or steal. You know, they played their match, they played defensive football, but you know, they did have a real hunger to try to get forward when they could.
Excellent. Just a couple more questions. Do you have any favorite parts of the book? Is there any part that you really enjoyed, whether it's researching or writing or just after once it's been published, thought, yeah, I'm particularly proud of that one part?
Oh, I really like the section on Rahagil. I think it was a lot of it was new information for me, what I was able to kind of uncover about his life and career. And, you know, we see him as this disciplinarian, as this tactician, but there is there's a real human touch to his coaching. There's a real emphasis on his part to get to know his players, to get them to believe, to get everybody pulling in the same direction. And that just further enhanced my view of him. So that particular section, it was kind of a joy to uncover things that I did not realize about the man. I think, you know, I as with any time this time period comes up, you know, June and July and the anniversary, I love the tournament itself. You know, it was such a few weeks of this amazing dream ride that we all went on. And any time that I can kind of go back and reflect and read something about it, even if it's about other sides, you know, because there were some great matches in that tournament and some great upsets as well. I love taking a trip through that tournament, you know. Of course, I would say that, but anytime anything about Euro 2004 comes up, you know, I'm all ears and ready to kind of, you know, eat it up.
And it was also a great summer for Greece as well, because they held a fantastic and successful Olympics as well.
Yeah, one of the commentators I was able to speak with, Kostas Vernikos, he, you know, when in his crazy commentary there at the end of the Czech Republic match, for instance, after Dela scores the silver goal to win it, you know, it's just this epic kind of line where he's like, this summer of Greece, this summer of the Olympic Games, and just everything, you know, it was just as far as being Greek, it was probably just the height, you know. I mean, it was just an amazing, amazing summer, you know. Everything just seemed to be going right, and of course, that all changed after a few years. But you know, it just left memories for all of us, I think, that will last a lifetime, and what a joy to be able to experience it.
No, agreed. Have you got a favorite player from that squad, from that side?
You know, I think my favorite player is Giannakopoulos, good old Stelios. You know, again, he was injured for part of that tournament. He probably didn't play as big of a role as he wanted to throughout the whole course. But when he came on, he just provided such a boost of energy. And his performances in the semifinal and final, I think, are kind of gone under the radar. In fact, right before Greece scores their goal in the final, Giannakopoulos tracks back and blocks a shot from Maniche, the Portuguese midfielder, who had already scored some fantastic goals in that tournament. And who knows what would have happened if he had not gotten in front of that shot, because Maniche was very well placed at that point. Literally a minute later, Greece go up the pitch and score. But Giannakopoulos, just full of endeavor, you know, the energy he brought to the team on the flanks. At some times, Rahaga would put him on the left side, which was really not familiar with playing with, but he just always put in an honest shift, you know, and that energy, I think, just when you have a player chasing things down like that, who's you know, an attacking player, it goes through the rest of the side. And for me, you know, he's probably my favorite. I will say, over researching the book, I think De Bizis was somebody that really rose in my book, because this is a player who for a decade is a stalwart in the national side. For 10 years, he is one of the first names on the team sheet. He gets injured on the eve of the tournament. He's declared by Rahagil not really fit to play in the opener. And Kapsis and Delas, the center-back pairing, end up starting the tournament so well that he never makes the pitch. This player that had given so much, you know, gets this stroke of bad luck where he's unable to play in the opener. And because of the defense has done so well, Rahagil just can't make a change. But the way he talks about this team and the way he lives the games on the bench, what he was relaying to me was just amazing. And I thought it was just symbolic of the whole side. If the Bizas, this big name of this team, is able to put the us above the I, you know, then you know you've got something special. So for me to see and to hear him talk about his experience and how he, of course, was disappointed, but, you know, that he was willing to kind of to cheer on his teammates and to hear him how he lived the games on the bench, that was special, I thought.
Oh, that's nice to hear. That's a great story. And final question, George, what's next for you? Any other books in the pipeline or any big stories coming up?
Yeah, there's a few projects that I'm kind of looking at right now. You know, I'd like to maybe do something in English language on the more comprehensive history of Greek football, a little bit more than I covered in the book, a little bit, you know, deeper details and stories and whatnot. So that's something that's always kind of there. And I think hopefully at some point I can really kind of dedicate a lot of time and energy into that. At this point, you know, I'll just kind of continue with some of my freelance work and see what other opportunities come up. But, you know, I'm always excited to look at the Greek game. I think there's a lot of great stories to be told even right now. And we'll see what happens as you know, what kind of reception maybe this book receives, and we'll go from there.
Excellent. George, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for joining me today and taking me through the journey. Tell our listeners where they can get the book and your Twitter handle, where they can read more about your stuff.
Absolutely. So the book is widely available on pretty much all Amazon sites. If you're in the United States, you can find it at all good bookstores. Barnes & Noble is another big site that sells it. A quick internet search, I think, for most people, probably be able to uncover it somewhere. My Twitter handle is at G Titsonis. That's at GTSITSONIS. And, you know, I'm always trying to put good info out there on the Greek game, and, you know, sometimes successful, sometimes not, but you'll be the judge of that. So if anybody's, you know, interested in hearing about Greek football, I'm usually trying to put some material out there.
Thank you, Jules. Thanks again. It's been a pleasure. This has been Mike Pieri, and you've been listening to Shoot the Defence. You can find us on Twitter at Shoot the Defence. My Twitter is at Del Pieri. And until next time, goodbye.